In season two of The Sneak, a podcast from For the Win and USA Today, we will tell the story of surfing champion Jack Roland Murphy, who in 1964 pulled a heist that made him the most famous jewel thief in the country. But that was just the beginning of his story, one that quickly spun out of control and then turned deadly. The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is available now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Or experience the entire series right now, ad-free, exclusively on Wondery Plus. Download the Wondery app and hear all of Season 2 today.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman. The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Now, Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
All right, the first NFL Sunday is complete. I'm Chris Corman for the win, joined by Stephen Ruiz, our lead NFL writer. Stephen, it was a great day of football. It was a little overwhelming. I forgot how much football actually happens on a Sunday, how many things there are to try to keep track of. But it was everything we'd been hoping for all summer, everything we'd been looking forward to. How did you feel watching these games?
Yeah, I was overwhelmed for sure in many different ways. Like watching the Patriots, I was overwhelmed with emotion watching Cam Newton in a competent offense. I was overwhelmed by red zone. Like going straight to red zone with no preseason is just, it was too much to handle. But yeah, I was surprised how good the football was. That was my biggest.
Yeah, I mean, one of my huge takeaways is that, like, we do not need to have exhibition games anymore. Certainly not. I guess it's going to go to three if they expand maybe it already did. I mean, we just don't need any, right? Like, the games were pretty good today. I mean, it's a way to limit how much contact players are going to have. And I thought offenses were a little dialed back. Like, I don't think we saw any offense really doing everything that it wants to do. You know, you and I were looking at passing charts and it just seemed like a bunch of them were constrained. There were a few that, you know, a little bit more established and they were taking shots downfield, but I think it was a little conservative. But other than that, the football was great. I mean, in many ways, it seemed better than a lot of week ones that I remember recently. We're going to try to get to a bunch of different storylines here. You know, we will talk about a lot of the things that we spent all summer. We started this show at the draft, and we spent the summer looking at these narratives, and now we know. Now we have something to go on. We have some thoughts. We have some tape to look at. These are obviously first blush impressions. This is just, you know, it's going to be a little bit takey because we're just running off adrenaline at this point and having watched these games. For those of you who may not have been listening to the show, our whole goal here is to take a deeper look at things. You know, Stephen has really specialized in marrying both film study and a deeper look at numbers using advanced metrics and analytics to try to explain games and take a deeper look at how things are actually happening. That's a little bit difficult to do at this point. I mean, it's getting easier. A lot of that information is becoming available more quickly, but like the All 22 film will not be available yet. And that's what he's going to use to take a deeper look. So this is sort of our first attempt at this. And then we are going to spend the week hopefully elaborating on what we've seen and what we've learned at For the Win, ftw.usatoday.com. You know, we will dig in deeper on things and really take a deeper look. But, you know, we certainly have some thoughts today. I just want to mention over at our site right now, you will find a lot of the buzziest news from the day. Andy Nesbitt, our terrific, I guess he's our West Coast correspondent. Maybe I'll call him that. I don't know. He's out in LA and he does a awards post every Sunday night, which is always fun, sort of rounding up the funniest, most interesting things that happen during the day. He also just posted the offensive pass interference that was called at the end of the Dallas Cowboys lost to the Los Angeles Rams. I guess you didn't feel you were not offended by that call.
No, I didn't think it was bad. I thought like Gallup created that separation by pushing Ramsey. I didn't think it was a bad call. Like I didn't think it was a great call, but people are acting like it's the worst call in the world. I thought it was, and if that happened in the second quarter, nobody would have fussed about it. Like,
yeah,
it's just when it happened.
It's almost like the Dallas Cowboys create more emotion for people. I don't know. It just seems like maybe that's part of the story here.
I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah. It's like they're America's team, and they're also a team the rest of America loves to hate. So here we are. But yeah, that post is up there. We have a bunch of other posts from throughout the day of everything that happened. I love looking at our site right now because Ezekiel Elliott's belly is just one of the featured images because he got a giant tattoo that says "Feed Me" on it.
Like I tweeted out, when that tattoo is just going to age like fine wine. Like the older and fatter he gets, the better that tattoo will be. It's not as good. Like it's kind of corny right now He's saying like feed him the football, like that's
right.
That's kind of corny. But when he's like a fat old man at Thanksgiving, and he's like he's gonna lift up the shirt when it's time for pie, like it's gonna be a great grandpa joke. And he's gonna tell it every Thanksgiving, and the kids are gonna laugh every time because they want to make grandpa feel good.
Yeah, he definitely planned it that way. I think he's you got to be strategic with your when you're spending your millions on tattoos. You got to make sure they're gonna last. So yeah, do check out For the Win, catch up on everything that happened today. But we are going to dive right in on a bunch of the narratives that we harped on all summer and wondered about and tried to break down and tried to predict. And none more so. I wish we had like a thought cloud for how much time we've spent on things, because I'm sure that the number one thing would be Cam Newton and replacing Tom Brady and what that would mean for the Patriots offense. You have been salivating at the thought of a Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels brain trust, having a different type of quarterback to build around and what that would look like and how it would go. And I think it was everything that you ever dreamed. I mean, I think it's like I said, I think it was restrained. I don't think they showed anything compared to what we're going to see, but what they did show was absolutely tantalizing. I mean, there's just so much promise here for how diverse they can be with Cam Newton in the backfield. What did you notice as you were watching this game?
Yeah. The one thing I don't think we saw is how they're going to start to use play action off of the looks where the quarterback's involved in the run game. Like a lot of their play action was actually from under center, and they ran a fair amount of under center. That was like the one surprise for me, is I thought it would be more gun heavy. But yeah, but when I felt like Newton was the centerpiece of that run game, which is something that I didn't think was going to happen. It was never really the case in Carolina. Like there were times when he ended up leading the team in carries, but I don't think he was, I don't know. Like it seemed like Carolina would run him when they needed to run him, like when they needed a first down. It wasn't like they ran him when the defense knew they were going to run him.
Right.
There was probably years where they did involve, like where he was like the focal point, but for him to, he led the Patriots in carries. I think it was his most carries since 2014, since really back when that was like the last time he was really healthy. So a lot of people predicted the Patriots would not be like using him as a runner a lot, like just sparingly and situationally. But I mean, that obviously wasn't the case.
Right. Yeah. Just to review, New England wins this game 21-11, beating the Dolphins. And Cam Newton, he completed 15 of 19 passes for 155 yards. And then ran the ball 15 times for 75 yards and two touchdowns. You know, I was just flipping through and sort of catching on Twitter, but you know, I saw just multiple looks from New England, which, you know, you expect that from a Bill Belichick defense, and it's, you know, they would go heavy a lot with Brady, and, you know, it's not like they weren't interesting with Brady, but so much of it was catered to Brady, and it just feels like that that trend broke today. I mean, it just feels like they, and like I said, it just feels like they're only just beginning to touch the surface of what they could end up doing. They don't, I mean, the lack of talent is pretty severe, right, on as far as receivers go. You know, if N'Keal Harry can emerge a little bit more, but they, I mean, there's a severe limit for what Cam Newton is throwing to. But, you know, I just think that the creativity with what they can do is going to carry this team pretty far.
Right. I think one of the ways that Cam kind of makes them more dangerous, and this was like a tactic they used with Tom Brady, was like they would put heavy personnel on the field and then spread it out and go empty. And that kind of like forces the defense to make a choice, like spread things out, like try to man up, which you're probably going to get mismatches, especially if you have like linebackers in the slot on Julian Edelman, or you play some zone and Brady would usually pick that apart. But now they have another element where they can run a quarterback draw. They did one.
Right, right.
I think it was like third and like seven or six. They just spread things out and can, you know, just follow his blockers and easily pick up the first down. So now this is going to make things so much harder. And I really want to see them start to use up tempo. We didn't see that really.
Right.
I actually think the passing game was mostly the same as what we saw, like under Brady. We just didn't see a lot of it. Like the proportions weren't the same, but this is kind of like what I had predicted when he signed, was the passing game was largely going to stay the same. Where we were going to see the difference was in the run game. And that's certainly what happened. Like we saw some concepts that I never thought I'd see the Patriots run. Like it wasn't just like your typical zone read runs where like the quarterback's reading the backside defender and if he crashes, then he'll like go around the edge. They're running like legit power read plays. Like Cam was like following, pulling guards. And
oh yeah,
they also get a couple sweeps, or they did the one sweep for the touchdown. That was a nifty play. So right. It was more diverse. I think it was more diverse than anything we ever saw at Carolina. Even like Carolina would run those power runs, but like the sweeps, we didn't really see out of Carolina. And he had like some keepers from under center where he'd take a handoff and kind of like make it bootlegs. And it was a lot to handle for a defense. Like once they start adding the play action, and I think they're going to add tempo eventually, I think it's just going to get harder and harder. And they're just going to continue to build on this run game like we've seen like the Ravens do.
Yeah, that one touchdown where I think it was empty and they had all the receivers to Newton's left.
Yeah.
And then he ran right behind the tackle pulled out and and then the tight end. I mean, you know, and he just waltzed. It was just like, and there was nothing. I don't know what a team is going to do to stop that. So, I mean, this is everything that you had been dreaming of, I think. And, you know, just envisioning this marriage between Belichick and Newton. Newton did have like a little dust up after the game. Apparently some Dolphins players were trying to grab his chain. So there's always fun with Newton. He also was wearing the best yellow suit I've ever seen in my entire life, prior to and after the game. So
he was dressed like Dick Tracy.
It's amazing. But Belichick, you know, Belichick continues to, he's always been complimentary of him, and it continues. I mean, he said something like, you know, Cam's been perfect for us. He puts his teammates first. So I think so far it's been exactly what we envisioned.
I have to imagine he was so happy, like with that. It was like a Navy run pass ratio. He was probably living, like he was just probably so happy. I can't wait for them to play the Ravens. I feel like the Ravens Patriots game is going to last 2 hours.
It's going to be Army Navy.
Right. It's going to last 2 hours. We're going to get like a total of like 10 passes in that game.
Let's check in on the guy that Cam Newton replaced, Tom Brady, in Tampa Bay now, and the returns were not so promising, I don't think, whatever they're trying to force down our throats with the Brady being there, Tampa Bay, whatever. It's just terrible. You know, I think we knew that this was going to be more of an adjustment. He's obviously going to a new team, and he's such an exacting player, and he's going into a much different offense. So our question all along was how much the offense would change, how much Bruce Arians would try to come back to Tom Brady, a player who was not throwing downfield, who was really relying on short passes, who was relying on play action. You know, that's just the quarterback he'd become. That's the system that sort of had been carved out in New England. So how much of that would change? And then Arians wants a deeper passing attack. And we found out a fair amount. Again, this is all first week stuff. Don't want to overreact to it, but Tampa Bay loses 34-23 to New Orleans. New Orleans is obviously amazing. We will talk about them in a little bit, but Brady was 23 for 36, 239 yards, two TDs, two interceptions, sacked three times. Yeah, I mean, he was. I don't know. What did you think? Yeah, it was not a very promising debut.
It sounded like you were starting to say a word. You're like, he was, and then just trailed off. But yeah, it was not good. Like, the interceptions weren't like, oh, he's still adjusting to Bruce Arians' offense. Like,
right.
The pick six was an awful throw, and it was like a throw you'd expect from a quarterback who looks kind of washed. Like, it was like high and behind the receiver on a quick out. And then the first interception, he just like floated it over the middle. I don't even know what that was. Like, he looked like the Tom Brady we saw last year, and that is not a good thing. And that's like not even taken into account that he has much better weapons around him. Like, he still right. looks the same as he did when he had Julian Edelman as his only reliable receiver.
Right.
And we thought it was going to take time, but I still think the throws are what bothered me. It wasn't even, I don't think it was like even at the time, they just, the throws were off like they were last year.
Right. Yeah. We have a long running joke where every year we would write like, oh, it looks like this is the year where Brady's going on his downturn, and then he would find a way. I mean, Tom Brady's started slowly in a lot of recent years, and he and Josh McDaniels, or he and McDaniels and Belichick, would figure something out with that offense. I think what's frustrating for Tampa fans probably here is that it didn't look like Brady was really having trouble acclimating with this new offense or building chemistry with his new wide receivers and tight ends. It looked more like it felt a little bit like he was fighting it. You know, I mean, we looked at his pass chart and it looks very much like a New England Tom Brady pass chart. I think he threw eight passes more than 15 yards, and maybe three of them were completed. One of them was intercepted. It did not really seem like he was embracing what the offense was actually trying to give him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Arians gave him much play action at all. Do you remember the number? It was pretty low.
Yeah, the rate was pretty low. I think it was like 17.9%, but
okay.
I do think a part of that was that they did fall behind early, and I think Arians is one of those old school coaches. Well, I guess Leftwich is also is calling to play, so it goes on him. But he kind of had the same philosophy where, like, they need the running game to be working to the call play action, even though the nerds have shown like there's no relationship right. between that. So I think that might have played a part in it. But yeah, like, Brady was not good. Like, even when he had open receivers and when he had time to throw, I'm looking for his completion percentage over expectation was 0.5. So he kind of like took what he kind of, you know, performed at an average level, considering like how much pressure he was under, how people were getting open. It wasn't a situation where he made those players better. And that's like kind of what Tampa Bay was banking on. And another thing they were banking on was their quarterback no longer putting their defense in tough spots and giving up points. And that's what Brady did. Like, I thought Tampa Bay's defense kind of looked good. I'm coming, like, the Saints scored a lot of points, but I'm coming away from that game thinking, like, this defense is for real and it's legit. I don't think it's going to be top five again, but it's a very good defense. It was very fast. It was giving Brady some problems.
Right.
But same old problem. Quarterback turning the ball over, giving up points, and that was what Tampa Bay, that's why they brought in Tom Brady. And if Tom Brady's not protecting the ball, he's not going to be doing the good things James was doing. He's not going to be chucking the ball downfield at age 43. So, I mean, I'm kind of I'm not ready to give up on the Bucs like I predicted in the past couple episodes that they would get off to a slow start. But, man, I had low expectations and they still failed to meet them.
Let's talk about Breeze. He equally looked not great. You know, it's again, this is another story that we track every year is, Breeze is incredibly accurate on certain throws and the arm strength is not there on others. And his timing has often made up for that. I mean, he's just a cerebral quarterback who has a great feel for an offense that he's been in forever. But would that eventually fall off? You just mentioned Tampa Bay's defense is better. It's a pretty good defense, probably better than most people realize. But Breeze seemed to struggle with that. How concerned are you considering the fact that I think we certainly feel like the Saints are the best, most talented team in the NFC.
I'm going to wait before I get concerned about Breeze, before I start panicking, because that is a tough defense to go up against when you don't have any preseason and you're kind of just going at it fresh. Of Todd Bowles' defense, you know he's going to blitz. You know they're going to play man. They're going to be flying around. So I don't know. I'm going to give Breeze one more week. But that was – it looked like Sean Payton did not trust him. That was a very Teddy Bridgewater type game plan that we saw. He was throwing the ball short. He barely threw the ball downfield, and when he did, it didn't look great. If I was a Saints fan, that's not what I would want to see, but I'm just holding off on hitting the panic button because it's Sean Payton. They still got, 30-something points out of it. Sean Payton's still going to be able to work around even a lesser Breeze. They're still going to be able to work around it. I just don't know if it's going to work against the best of the best in the NFL. You're going to need a good performance out of your quarterback to beat Patrick Mahomes, for instance.
Right. Yeah. I mean, watching that game, a little bit of it and looking through the numbers and charts is what really made me feel if Sean Payton is even dialing things back, I wonder if every other coach is they've been doing it for a long time, but it just feels like maybe they didn't feel like the timing was going to be there for some of their more ambitious plays. And they were just going to take, what they could get with shorter plays and be a little bit more conservative, even in the passing game. I think you're right. We'll wait to see what comes of that offense as it moves forward.
I want the Saints to do a little quarterback rotation, have Drew Brees. He does the quick game passes, the quick pass concepts, bring in Taysom Hill for red zone and goal line so you can do some quarterback runs. And then everything else, when you want to drop back and chuck it downfield, bring in Jameis.
We just want to see Jameis. We're finding a way each show to mention the fact that we want to see Jameis play without bodily harm happening to Jameis.
If I have Jameis in my team, I'm only throwing passes 20 yards downfield because then you're either getting a deep completion or it's basically just an arm punt. Just bring Jameis in and just let him chuck it.
An arm punt. Love it.
Also, I'm mad that we have not been able to see clear-eyed Jameis, we 2020 Jameis yet. Because he had
that's
surgery.
A good point. Yeah. Yeah.
The Counter.
The Dallas Cowboys, I think, were a team that we thought would be at the top of the NFC as well. End up losing the Sunday night game 20-17 to the Rams. This felt like a Mike McCarthy game. Mike McCarthy hired after a year off to coach the Cowboys. NFL Network did a big profile of McCarthy and visited him, and he was stowed away in his garage, I'm studying for the next year, and I'm taking in everything new, and I'm changing who I am. But that was just a carbon copy of stale Mike McCarthy late Packers run when there was just listlessness. It was sort of bewildering. You mentioned after the game you watched and you thought Zeke Elliott was really explosive and looked really good. He went for 22 carries for 96 yards. Dak Prescott looked great. 25 for 39, 266 yards, one TD. CeeDee Lamb got involved, the rookie wide receiver, 5 catches for 59 yards. Amari Cooper was Amari Cooper, 10 for 81. But there was there were only 17 points on the board.
Right. There was like no explosive plays, like no attempts to throw the ball downfield. I don't know if the Rams secondary was that good, which is, I guess is possible, but it just looked very static from the Cowboys. It looked, like you said, it looked like 2017 Packers offense. And like, where are all these plays that Mike McCarthy was studying in the offseason? What happened to that? Like, even like his analytical decisions, he went to PFF and studied the analytics with the nerds, and it didn't really show up. Like, he went for it on that fourth down in the fourth quarter, and they came up short. But there was other opportunities to go for it on fourth, and he passed on them. And they did run the ball a fair amount on first down, which was an issue with Jason Garrett. But that had always been like a thing that Mike McCarthy did. Like, if you look back at his run pass ratios on early downs, like he had always been a guy that leaned heavily on the pass. So I didn't see any evolution from Mike McCarthy. He was the same guy that he was in Green Bay, at least for this one game.
Right. Yeah.
So I want to see how it changes going forward. And like, it didn't look like what we saw at Kellen Moore's offense last year early.
Right. Yeah. And that was the thing we wondered all summer, was how much McCarthy has talked a good game, that it was going to, he was learning from Moore. He had more to learn than anybody. He was getting acclimated, so it certainly sounded like it was going to be Kellen Moore's offense again, but it did not look that way in this game. Again, I will repeat that, it just seemed like a lot of offenses were a little bit dialed back. So maybe this one will emerge as we go on, but it was not, certainly not, if you're a Dallas fan, what you wanted to see in week one. Alden Smith, meanwhile, on the defense side of the ball, who was returning, God, I don't even remember the last time he played, but he looked amazing. Mm-hmm. He was really good. So it feels like maybe if you miss a few years of football, it is possible to come back.
It was great. Like, I should have picked him for NFL comeback player of the year. I wasn't even thinking about him as an option, but he looked like the old Alden Smith that we saw in San Francisco. And it's been like 6 years since we've seen that. And Alden Smith, it's crazy how good he still is. That just shows how talented of a player he was back then. Like, he was like, I think he could have been a star on the level of Aaron Donald. Maybe that's maybe a little too much, but like, one of those guys that's like just a freak and like a totally unique player at his position.
Yeah. Speaking of Aaron Donald, he was just throwing people around. Just a vintage Aaron Donald performance. If you go on Twitter right now and search Aaron Donald and look at the videos, there's just people pulling clips of him absolutely ragdolling everyone, and doing it with like one armed. We were marveling at a clip. I mean, he just absolutely bull rushes people. It's amazing. You know what you're going to get with him, and he was fantastic. Jalen Ramsey, who just got the big contract, was great. He had a huge pass breakup where he destroyed Amari Cooper to break up what would have been a first down. Just his usual physical self. Are the Rams back? Jared Goff looked okay-ish. His offensive line was way better than it was last year, and he is right. He is just atrocious when he does not have time. Tonight he had a little bit of time. He's obviously getting guidance from Sean McVay on the sideline. He was back to being that manager guy that, is being asked to make fairly simple throws and a couple difficult ones, and he did the job tonight. So are we buying the Rams?
You have to buy them based on what we've seen. Like, that's the only evidence we have right now. Like, their offensive line was so much better. Like, mm-hmm. I've kind of been saying all offseason that was their issue last year, was their offensive line was just couldn't do anything in the run game or the pass game. But they were kind of pushing that Cowboys defensive line around in the run game. And, McVay had the training wheels on all first half. Like, I think at one point Jared Goff's average depth to target was, like, minus 0.4 yards. Yeah. I think Bill Barnwell tweeted that. And that's what it looked like. Everything was schemed. There was like, it was a bunch of screens. It was a bunch of throws to the flat. He wasn't throwing downfield at all. There was a point in the second half where McVay kind of took the training wheels off, and Goff actually responded well. Like he had a pretty surgical drive that I think ended in a touchdown. But then he like immediately threw an interception after that, and like McVay probably realized, we can only do that for so long.
Right. Yeah. What do you mean? There was a lot of talk about that on Twitter about how different the offenses were between, you know, where Dak was being asked to do a ton on his own, and Goff really had things laid out. So for those of us who don't immediately see that when we watch the game, what sort of things are you talking about? Like, what sort of plays equal training wheels for you?
Like those plays where there's really only one intended receiver, or there's like one read where you're like reading whether a defender jumps an underneath route or like takes the crossing route behind him. So it wasn't really like, it wasn't like Dak, whereas Dak was like reading the whole field. He was going through progressions. He was having to find the open receiver, whereas the Rams play call was dictating who the open receiver would be for Goff. So I don't think he was doing much thinking. Now, it did open up in the second half where he was doing a little more, and it worked initially, but then we saw what happened when you asked too much of Jared Goff. So I think that was the big difference. Like he probably had a good idea of who he was throwing the ball to before the snap, whereas Dak was doing it based on what he saw from the defense and who was getting open.
The other NFC East game today was the Philadelphia Eagles playing the Washington football team. And the football team, I mean, this is a promising start for your buddy Ron Rivera. Washington wins 27-17. Had actually trailed 17-0. The Eagles were totally in control. Carson Wentz looked like his best self, winging the ball downfield, making plays, and then he turned into the absolute worst version of himself. Was just panicking a little bit, making bad reads. This play, you know, I think I sent you the win probability chart, and it's very drastic. But really, the story here is that the Eagles were already weak on the offensive line because Lane Johnson was out, and then the guy they started at right tackle, whose name actually right now is completely escaping me, he's a rookie, and he got hurt, and the Redskins, the strength of that team is the defensive line.
Put a dollar in the jar.
Oh, gosh. The football team, the strength of that team is the defensive line. Chase Young, the draft pick out of Ohio State, had 1.5 sacks. He was a monster, but the whole defensive line really was amazing. Matt Ioannidis, everyone they threw out there was. Ryan Kerrigan looked like he had 2 sacks. It looked like he turned the clock back about 6 years. I mean, he was just
I drove by the stadium actually and picked up a sack.
Yeah, you would have.
Checked into the game real quick and picked up a sack.
Why didn't you play right tackle for the Eagles? And then things might have gone a little bit better.
Because it would have looked like what Aaron Donald was doing to the Cowboys.
It was Jack Driscoll was, and he's a rookie. I mean,
that is a made up name.
Yeah. And then Jordan Mailata, the rugby player that they picked a couple years ago, he had to step in at right tackle. So it was really a case of one team's worst weakness meeting up with another team's strength. That's not to say that the Eagles shouldn't be worried. I mean, Carson Wentz probably should have been better. I mean, I think that what we're learning about Wentz is that when a play breaks down, he can sometimes make the play, but when he knows he's going to get under pressure, he does not like pre-plan what to do to deal with the fact. Like, it never seemed to dawn on him. He got hit 14, he got sacked 8 times and he got hit 14 times. And neither he nor Doug Peterson really seemed to do anything to mitigate that issue. They just sort of like kept running the offense as if the line wasn't getting plowed out over every play. And so it's certainly not promising for the Eagles, just because they did not seem to adjust very quickly at all. So
if you would have told me like the Eagles lost that game, I would have just assumed like that's the reason they lost. It was like
right.
Washington's defensive line dominated their line. And so it's not very surprising, but it's very concerning because the line's not going to get healthier. I mean, I know Lane Johnson will eventually come back, but Brandon Brooks is out. Andre right. Dillard, who was supposed to be the left tackle, is out. So it's not going to be healthy all season because both of those guys are out for the year. But how did the defense look? Because apparently Dwayne Haskins did not have a good game. They ended
no,
up
yeah.
Back,
I think the Redskins, every one of their scoring drives started. Oh, damn. The football team, every one of their football drives started on their half of the football field. So, you know, Dwayne Haskins did not have to do a ton. You know, I don't remember much about Haskins from last season. He looked pretty much the same to me. Mm-hmm. Missed a couple throws. You know, was not fantastic. I think. Let me look at his EPA. Yeah, he had a negative 0.05 EPA on dropbacks. So certainly not there really yet, but did enough to get by. I mean, it's certainly a step. And mm-hmm. and the Washington people, the football team fans are thrilled with Ron Rivera at this point. I think this is definitely a game that you do not take a whole lot from for either team, other than the fact that the Redskins have a very good defensive line and the Eagles have a very bad offensive line.
Which we knew going in. So, like, yeah, I don't think that really adjusts our priors in any way.
Right.
But the Eagles need to get Lane Johnson back, and he needs to stay healthy. Because if they lose another lineman, I don't see how they even have a chance of competing for the playoffs unless the NFC East is a disaster, which is very possible.
Right. That's true. You mentioned adjusting our priors, and that's really another theme of this week. The week one, it did not do a lot to jar us from what we were thinking. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there are a whole lot of the Colts lost to the Jaguars in a way that we certainly did not anticipate. I don't know that there were any other really shocking games so far.
Yeah, like the Cardinals winning in San Francisco is kind of a shock, but how they did it was not a shock. And the reason they won was also not a shock, because the last time we saw the 49ers play football, they lost for the same reason. It's just Jimmy Garoppolo just can't make the plays that Kyle Shanahan sets him up to make. Like every time, I don't know if you caught any of the game, but every time he dropped back to pass and that first look wasn't there, it just was panic mode.
Like, right.
Kyle Shanahan had to just like gasp every time Jimmy G had to go beyond his first read, because it was just a disaster. Like there is a play I just saw on Twitter where he literally runs in like circles. He like does like two laps around the pocket. It's amazing.
Right. And you've done terrific breakdowns on Garoppolo. I mean, obviously we dug in on him because he got a huge contract when really he had not played much and it was sort of an unknown. I mean, he was playing for the Patriots, who, again, you know, one of the smartest coaching staffs in the NFL, make players look good. So you were trying to break down and sort of notice that he is not somebody who goes off his first read. I mean, and I think you even showed some clips where, like, basically Shanahan was only having him look at one half of the field. I mean, he was not even being asked to try to scan the field. I mean, it was just being dumbed down for him so much. And he once again, it just really was the problem. And it got, I think NFL Twitter, San Francisco Twitter has protected him a lot. You know, he was mm-hmm. not a guy who, I mean, you know, he was mitigated by what Shanahan called in the playoffs last year. You know, it was one game where he threw single digit passes, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this was a narrative that those fans have fought against for a while, and it actually turned. I mean, I really feel like there was a turn today where they were like, okay, yeah, actually Jimmy G is the problem. And he's he's in this gaggle of quarterbacks. I wish I had your rankings up, but that you had like sort of youngish quarterbacks, second to fifth, sixth year, that were just sort of wondering, like, are they going, can they take that step? There's so many of these guys. Garoppolo is one of them. I think in this 24-20 loss to the Cardinals, it sure seemed like he did not take any steps in the offseason. He was 19 for 33, 259 yards, but just missed a lot of big throws and just was not dynamic enough to make the offense work the way it should. Shanahan is dialing up so many things that should give him easy throws, and he's missing them. Who are a couple of those other guys? Sam Darnold, I think, had an atrocious day, just did not look very good. Baker Mayfield ended up on the wrong side of a route. What did you see from some of those guys? We talked about Goff a little bit already and whether or not he's making the step, but did any of those guys, Garoppolo, Darnold, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, these players that we think are decent quarterbacks who could jump up into being really good quarterbacks and need to when they start making huge money, did any of them take those steps in your mind? Did you see any of them sort of show you anything that makes you think, okay, they're going to get it this year?
No, not at all. Like, they all look the same as they did the last time you saw them. Like, right. Garoppolo, I remember when I wrote that post before the Super Bowl, like, one of the stats I looked at that was really shocking was, like, he had the fewest throws. I think it was 5 yards downfield and outside the numbers, basically. Mm-hmm. And he only had one completion today. So it's more the same with him. Baker was the one that I was really disappointed. I thought playing in that offense would kind of hide those issues that he had last year, where he was kind of panicking in the pocket. He wasn't setting his feet, wasn't like playing in rhythm, and he was leaving the pocket way too early. And it was just more of the same against the Ravens. Like, it looked like 2019 Baker, like, and it looked like the disjointed Browns offense we saw last year. Stefanski, right. That was a terrible debut for him.
Yeah, but Baker was 21 for 39, 189 yards, a TD, and an interception.
And he's lucky he didn't throw at least three interceptions. Like, he threw that first one on the first drive, which he almost threw an interception to Calais Campbell. It, like, went right through his hands to another Ravens defensive back. And then he had one where I think it was a safety. He kind of threw behind, I want to say, Odell Beckham, and a safety had it right in his hands, and he dropped it. And then there was another one where a linebacker stepped in front of like a little hitch route to a tight end, but saw one of the defensive linemen actually batted the ball at the line. Like, it would have been a pick. So he could have easily thrown three interceptions, but nothing looked easy for him. Like, nothing was in rhythm. Nothing was easy. Those play action passes that everyone thought were going to like solve Mayfield's issues, you didn't see any of those really. And it just looks like every throw he makes, he's like trying to throw the ball as hard as he can. Like, he's such a high effort thrower, and it like makes sense, like, that he was a 2-time walk-on. Like, he's not a physically gifted quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just did not, the little bit that I watched, you think back to the player he was in college, and like you said, like, he just played in rhythm. Like, it felt like he knew where he was going with the ball, and he would just put it there. And he was very comfortable in the offense. And, I think we all expected to see a little bit more of that this year. We've been hoping to see it. He's had a tumultuous situation in Cleveland for a while now, and just settle into an offense that was going to play a little bit more to his strengths. And again, as we've been talking about, making it easy. It's not a bad thing for a coach to make it easy on a quarterback, especially one who's young.
His job.
Right. And it did not happen at all.
I think he had the benefit of being Lincoln Riley's first quarterback.
Yeah. That's
because
a good point.
Everyone that's followed him has been good. And they've all been like guys that, like, Kyler Murray hadn't started a full season. He was amazing. Spencer Rattler just like had averaged like 18 yards per attempt on Saturday and threw for 4 touchdowns in 1 half. So like he looked comfortable, more comfortable in college, but everybody looks comfortable in that offense. That's what happens when you play for Lincoln Riley. He just makes playing quarterback look easier. So, I mean, But even then, you could see these same issues like pop up on tape when he was pressured. Like he would panic and his feet were bad. And it's the same issue over and over again. That's why I'm not optimistic that he's going to be able to turn it around. Like, this is who he's always been. Why would we think it's just going to turn around magically one day? I don't think it's going to happen in the middle of a season, especially. Like, it would be something that you fix during the offseason. You show up in week one and you see it right away. And we did not see it in Baltimore today. So, I mean, I think there's going to be questions about whether it's time to move on after this year.
Wow. How about your buddy, Josh Allen? The Bills beat the Jets 27-17. Jets had they had a late score that made it look a little bit closer. I mean, it was a pretty strong performance. 33-46, 312 yards, 2 touchdowns for Allen. You know, they gave him one of the premier targets in the league in the offseason. Stephon Diggs had 8 receptions for 86 yards. You know, you didn't see anything from him that made you think he might get it?
No, not really. Like, he had a lot of, like, LOL moments. Like, he had a couple ghastly fumbles. He didn't throw an interception, but I wasn't watching the game. I was watching it on Red Zone, catching bits here and there. But I saw at least like 2 balls that should have been intercepted, maybe even 3. Like, he was throwing it into like, he was trying to turn the ball over at times. And he had that miss to John Brown in the back of the end zone. That was like, he threw it 5 yards over his head, and it was only like a 5-yard pass. So, yeah, it was more the same for Josh Allen. He was not good. And that, like, his stat line was good, but I thought Daboll did an excellent job. Like, Daboll, like, knows who Josh Allen is, and he knows how to work around his weaknesses. So I think it's going to be okay. Like, I don't think the Bills season is going to be sunk. I think if Allen's the same guy as he was last year, and based on week one, he looks like the same guy he was last year. But Daboll has had more time to, you know, build an offense, and he adjusted last year in the middle of the year. So I think you're just going to see that momentum carry over, and I think the Bills offense is going to be fine.
Right. And Allen did run 14 times for 57 yards.
Oh, yeah. When running. He was like running over dudes, too.
Right, right. I mean, you can certainly make an offense work around him, especially if your defense is as good as Buffalo. Sam Darnold, on the other hand, 21 for 35, 215 yards, sacked 3 times. Just a putrid game.
Maybe the worst interception I saw all week, I'm excluding Joe Burrow's little shovel pass, but the worst downfield interception I saw. He just tossed it. Like, I think he was running to his left and just threw it over the middle late and just lofted it over just a terrible interception, and one that we've come to expect from Sam Darnold. He's been doing this since college. He led the nation in turnovers this last year at USC. So it's not like this is who he is. I think this is who he's always going to be. That's why I wrote that post in the offseason. Like, there were a couple dimes he threw, but it doesn't make up for the rest of everything he does. And I know Adam Gase isn't helping him at all, but Adam Gase didn't make him throw that ball late over the middle. It was a terrible interception. That was all on him. And I just think if the Jets keep making excuses for them, they're just going to set themselves back.
It certainly feels like Gase, the hot seat is very hot. It feels like both him and Matt Patricia were guys that we pinpointed going into the season that seemed to be on rocky footing. Gase, I mean, this offense, it just did not look good. There's not much going on. They couldn't run the football. Nothing there. And then Patricia, the Lions gave up 21 points in the fourth quarter to lose to the Bears, who are quarterbacked by Mitch Trubisky, 27-23. So it certainly seems, I mean, again, it's a weird year. Who knows what's going to happen in 2020, but it certainly seems like if you're putting money on which coach will be replaced first, it feels like those two are way out ahead of the pack at this point. How about Kyler Murray? He's a young quarterback that a lot of people, he was a popular pick to emerge the way that Lamar Jackson did last year and maybe challenge. He was everyone's favorite dark horse MVP candidate, especially since he got DeAndre Hopkins as a target via trade. What did you think about him? We already talked about the game, 24-20 win. He, you know, managed it pretty well. You know, was had one of the most scintillating runs of the day for a touchdown. Seemed to have good, you know, really good connection already with Hopkins. What'd you make of his day, and how Cliff Kingsbury, another coach that you've dug in a lot on, how his offense has or has not evolved so far?
I thought Kingsbury's play calling was a little too cute today, especially against that defense where everyone is so fast and like you're not going to be able to throw those little screen passes out to the flat and expect to have like pick up a lot of yards. But I think the one thing that I'm really happy to see from Murray is that he avoided sacks, which was his big thing last year. His big issue was like not only just taking sacks, but taking long sacks.
He had two for six.
Yeah, right.
That was the big number for him, is that he did not run backwards and get sacked.
Yeah, especially against that defensive line. Like 2 for 6 is the best you can hope for.
Right.
I thought he was good. Like I didn't see anything. I didn't see any bad throws. I didn't really see any bad decisions. Like I thought he managed the pocket well. I just want to see more downfield passes. We didn't see enough of that. Maybe it's just because they played the 49ers and the you know, you can't drop back against that team, especially right. when you don't have a good offensive line. The Cardinals don't have good pass protection. So I'm hoping it's just a product of playing one of the better defenses in the league and one that's very good at preventing deep balls. So,
yeah.
But we didn't see really any other receivers get involved. Like Christian Kirk was a non-factor. Isabella, was he hurt or was he? I don't even know if he was targeted. Maybe he was hurt, but it was all DeAndre Hopkins. What did Hopkins had 14?
14? Yeah. 14 of the 26 receptions. You know, and they continue to not really have any. I mean, Dan Arnold caught 2 passes as a tight end. You know, they're just not. There's not a whole lot to work with. Max Williams was targeted twice and didn't get any catches. So I don't know. It just seems like. you know, we knew Hopkins would be good. Larry Fitzgerald had 4 catches on 5 targets. But yeah, it does not feel like the number of possibilities for Murray is where Kingsbury would want it to be. So he ended up running 13 times for 91 yards. You know, I mean, but like you said, it was a little cute today. I think you're right. It had a lot to do with just a monster defensive line that you can't really do much about. So it's another one we'll be watching as we go forward. Speaking of Lamar Jackson, did defenses figure him out during the offseason? Did they use the film and figure out the running quarterback? That's one of my favorite, quite frankly, racist tropes about black quarterbacks is that as soon as a defense coordinator watched the film, this running quarterback will be figured out. No one has figured out Lamar Jackson. He was once again utterly brilliant, both running and passing the ball. I will shock you by telling you that. The Ravens, you know, I made a big we recorded a little segment Thursday night after the Chiefs game, and I was over the top about how good the Chiefs are, wondering who is going to challenge them. And I think the answer is that the Baltimore Ravens could challenge the Chiefs because they looked very, very good. We talked about the Browns not looking very good, but the Ravens just seemed pretty complete. What did you make of that game? How much did you see, and what are your thoughts on Lamar as he goes forth from an MVP season?
The thing is, like, I feel like the Browns did as good of a job as you can against the Ravens' run game. They had 107 yards on 30 carries. Like, that's not
right. Three point six.
Yeah, per carry. Not the efficiency we saw last year in the run game. And guess what? It didn't matter. I just almost called him LeBron. which tells you where Lamar is at this point. Like, it didn't matter. He's just picking them apart, and right. he's throwing downfield, and he was accurate, and he just looks so comfortable. Like, defenses did – I'm here to report defenses did not figure him out over the offseason. At least the Browns defense did.
No.
Which, they're a team that you would think, like, would prepare for him more than most outside of the AFC North. And they had him for the week one game, so they had a little extra time to prepare, and they were not prepared for Lamar Jackson throwing the ball.
Right.
He's going to be an MVP candidate again. Like, everyone expected him to regress and, like, his touchdown percentage to come back. But I think he's just a unique player, and we just have to get used to it.
Right. Yeah, we were worried a little bit about Baltimore's receiving depth. I mean, in as far as they don't really seem to have it, and Marquise Brown dealt with injuries last year, and just sort of like, okay, is he going to be good? He was great. 5 receptions for 101 yards. Willie Snead had 4. Mark Andrews, who Jackson loves to throw to, at 5 for 58. But, like, this is just sort of what the offense is, right? Like, it doesn't – I mean – Lamar is such a threat that he opens up for those guys. Like, I was sitting there watching the game thinking, like, man, what if Lamar Jackson had Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. to throw to? Like, what would that – like, that would be insane. But, like, it's already insane because he opens so much up for that offense and makes it so possible for players who are not as talented as those guys to get open and make catches anyway. I mean, it's startling to watch.
Yeah. And one thing, I feel like the Browns like were better on the ground than the Ravens were in this game. And it still didn't matter for Baker Mayfield. Like, he has so many weapons. The run game was good. I didn't think the defensive line or the offensive line was that bad, considering they were going up against Wink Martindale, his crazy ass sending all those blitzes. So,
right.
Like, I feel like we can't use the help excuse for Mayfield anymore. And, like, yeah, like, I just want to see Lamar have that type of talent around him, because it is – the receiving core, I think, is talented, but it's very young. And I don't know – like, based on how they run the offense, I don't know if we're – he's going to be challenged – in a way where he's going to have to change up how he passes the ball. Like, I don't think we're ever going to – the Ravens have the personnel to run, like, a quick passing offense. And my worry is that he'll never get the live reps to develop that part of his game. I think he's very capable of doing it. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be more of a feature of the offense going forward. But that would be my one concern with what this offense looks like, is that – and, like, you can't blame the Ravens for doing it, because it's very good and it works and it's effective, and they're not thinking about, like, they're thinking about winning football games, not, like, what's going to be the best thing to prepare Lamar Jackson for football when he's 30 years old. But, yeah, this offense is just – the run game is growing. It's, like, evolving. They did a couple concepts that I didn't see them do even last year when they had the most, you know, exotic run game in the NFL. And I think it's just going to continue to grow. Like I said during the offseason, I'm more like, yes, defense has got film on Lamar Jackson, but Lamar Jackson also got film on defense. It's like, he's going to grow mentally as a player, and the Ravens are going to figure out how teams were defending him last year and how to exploit that. Like, I'm more worried about defenses trying to catch up to the Ravens offense than the other way around.
Another quarterback came into this year. We were wondering whether he could regain his old form, Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers. Obviously, Jordan Love was picked to be his backup and eventual replacement, we assume. Rodgers did not seem particularly pleased by that development. You know, this is a long narrative in Green Bay of you know, Aaron Rodgers was the newcomer once upon a time, forcing Brett Favre out. So, I certainly was down on this team, sort of feeling like, oh man, there's just a lot of negative vibes coming out of Green Bay right now. Didn't know what to think. Felt like Rodgers might, be sort of looking for a second act like Tom Brady. But Aaron Rodgers today was terrific. 32-44. 364 yards, 4 TDs. Green Bay beat Minnesota 43-34. And it wasn't really – I don't know exactly what happened. I was flipping through and caught a little – Minnesota scored 24 of its points in the fourth quarter. So Green Bay was really running away with it before that. This division we thought would be one of the closest. Do you feel like Green Bay has shown something that puts them out of this pack right now, out in front of the pack right now?
I don't think so. I have to watch the game too, but we know Aaron Rodgers has this in him. And like, it's not a surprise that Aaron Rodgers was capable of putting together a game like that. This, it's whether he can sustain it. Like, that's been his issue in the last couple of years, is that he hasn't been hitting on those magical throws as often as he did when he was at the height of his powers. Like, it happened in week one. So that's all we've seen from him so far. We don't know where it's going to go from here. I could very easily see him having another, like, not a bad game, but a game where he doesn't throw for four touchdowns and 300 plus yards. Before I'm ready to say Aaron Rodgers is back, I need to see him like string together a month of these performances.
And man, we love to talk about quarterbacks, but Joe Burrow was obviously the number one pick. We did a ton of analysis of what we thought he would look like as an NFL player, and you know, more specifically, what his acclimation to the league would look like. You were fond of pointing out a completely fair point, which is that he was a very old college player. He was a couple of years older than most of the other players in the field because he had to sit out after transferring from Ohio State. And that maturity certainly showed up. I mean, he was just a very calm player and a player who had clearly an advanced understanding of what LSU was doing offensively and what defenses were trying to do to stop it. I mean, he was an older player, a mature player. And the worry was that would not obviously translate at the NFL, where none of those things are true. He was not going to be older and he was not going to understand things better. So he was going to have some physical limitations that would mean that he's going to need to adapt and it's going to take some time. I think that his performance today had a lot of people feeling like because there are people who think he's going to be an elite quarterback. And I think those people feel like his performance today justified that a little bit, that he was good. The Bengals did end up losing 16-13 to the Chargers. They're the Bengals. The kicker missed a kick at the end and apparently was injured on that. But Burrow looked a lot like Burrow for LSU. You know, he was pretty calm. He had a nice run for a touchdown that showed a lot of moxie. 23 for 36, 193 yards. Average pass, I don't know what his average depth of target was, but the average yards was 5.4, so probably not very high. Did you see anything promising, or was this just a guy who came in and managed to manage the game and a coach that sort of put it in front of him and made it simple enough for him to do that?
I think that is what happened, but I think that is impressive to do in your first game as an
especially
NFL
with
player.
No exhibition games and no all the offseason, you know, up until training camp being virtual.
And the offensive line was horrible against a very good defensive line. So he had that. The one thing that did stick out to me that I would consider a negative would be it's very clear, like, he had that long run for the touchdown, but it's very clear that he is not going to be the same level of scrambler that he was at the college level, where he could outrun most defensive ends and edge rushers. And he tried to do a lot of that against the Chargers and ran into a couple sacks. I don't think his athleticism is going to be a huge factor. It's going to help him. He's going to be a scrambler, but it's not going to be a part of his game that we see consistently, I don't think. And I think it's going to take some time for him to realize what he can and can't do at the NFL level. And that's one of the things.
Right. He did connect with AJ Green, who's returning from injury five times for 51 yards. So he has that really premier as long as Green stays healthy and, you know, is really back to what he was. He has a really premier target. So, I do think he'll grow a lot as the season goes on, and maybe we'll see more from this offense, open up, like I said, I keep saying it, but as they open it up a little bit. But, you know, it was certainly a promising start, I think very much in line with what we had been predicting all along for what he needs to look like and how he needs to grow. You know, you're not going to get the best, you know, it's not going to be the best scenario to just throw him out there and expect him to run a high powered dynamic offense. It's just not going to, this is sort of what we expected. We are coming up on Monday night games. Two more to close out this week. Man, there's been so much happening. But like you said, I'm not sure that we really feel too much differently about how we thought about the league before. The Chiefs, Saints, Ravens are really good. But what are we hoping to learn? What are you wondering about going into the Monday night games? Steelers at Giants is first, and then Titans at Broncos. What are the storylines that you're looking forward to in our first Monday night?
More quarterbacks. Like, I want to see what Ben Roethlisberger looks like. I think we're going to know pretty early on if he's still got it. And if he does still have it, then I think the Steelers are a legitimate threat to the top of the AFC, like even the Chiefs. And then Ryan Tannehill, like, is he going to be the best quarterback in the NFL again? I don't think so, but I want to see how sustainable what the Titans did last year. And then Drew Lock, I'm invested in at this point. I got a lot of anti-Drew Lock's stock. And I'm sure if he plays well, I'm going to hear a lot about it. But, that second game, like, usually when you have the opening week Monday night doubleheader, the first game is the marquee matchup, and the second game is just like a whatever, like, you don't really want to watch it. But I feel like it's the opposite this year. Like, Giants Steelers is just not interesting to me at all outside of Broncos.
Right. Yeah, Titans Broncos I think will tell us a lot because you know, it's very, the Broncos are in a little bit of the same position as the Bills, you know, where it just seems like they have enough talent. The defense might not be as good, but the offensive talent surrounding Drew Lock is probably a little bit better. I mean, obviously the Bills have a high end Stephon Diggs, you know, at wide receiver, whereas the Broncos have it spread out a little bit more. But it seems like it's a team that should be able to get by. It'll be very interesting to see the Titans. I know you're going to be keenly watching the defense after losing Dean Pease and, you know, a guy who was very creative in what he was doing. And now it seems like that's on Mike Vrabel. So, you know, see how that team moves forward. And then Derrick Henry, too, you know, just whether or not he's going to have, it's hard for running backs who lead the league in rushing to come back and do it the next year. It just is not something that, you know, the way that the game wears on running backs makes that very difficult to do. So, you know, two more exciting games tonight that we'll be watching. Tell everyone what you are going to be doing the rest of the week. You know, this is an important thing with our podcast. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of NFL podcasts out there, a lot of really smart people talking about the games. You know, we are trying to differentiate ourselves a little bit by taking a deeper look. We will release the next episode of our podcast on Friday. So you'll find this show every Monday morning and every Friday morning. Monday morning is just going to be like this. We're sort of giving our split reactions to what happened around the league, trying to catch you up, trying to give you a little bit of insight. You know, we're going to be looking at some of the advanced stats that we can get in the charts and hopefully taking you a level deeper. But then really where Steven is going to spend his week looking at things on an even deeper level and trying to explain to you why and how things are happening. And this is something he's been doing the last couple years, really trying to figure out, like, you know, like I was talking about earlier with Jimmy G, you probably see a lot of Twitter conversation like Jimmy G's this or Jimmy G's that. And Steven is the one who's going to break it down, use a bunch of film clips, use a bunch of different stats and numbers to show you what is actually happening. So tell everyone what sort of things you're going to be looking into this week as you study the first batch of film and as the numbers sort of solidify. I mean, obviously right now we're dealing with you know, people are sort of creating these stats on the fly based on play by play. Some of that changes. We get a better sense. Charts come out. So tell everyone what you'll be looking at and how you'll be studying this.
I want to look at the Patriots offense and just see not only what they did in the run game, but what they did in the play action game. That's something you really can't see on the broadcast view, like what's going on downfield. I want to see how Cam Newton played as a passer too. We didn't see a lot of it, but I want to see how he was reading the field.
His arm looked pretty strong, right? I mean, he looked, because there was some concern about the shoulder and the foot and the...
Yeah, he looked healthy all around. Like when he was taking off with the ball, he was accelerating well. Yeah, he was throwing some strong passes downfield. I also want to look at how Jamal Adams was used in the Seahawks defense. I think that's interesting to see how they kind of evolve with this new player, this player they've never really had, and how they're adjusting in a post-Legion of Boom world. Those are like the two things I'm really interested in looking at right now, but I'm sure some other things will pop up as I watch some film. The Cowboys offense is another thing I want to see. I want to see if like my perception of what was happening was actually true, and whether like if this offense was McCarthy's offense from Green Bay, or we saw a little more Kellen Moore influence.
Right. Yeah. We didn't mention Seattle that much, but they won 38-25 over the Falcons, looked really, really good. Russell Wilson looked totally dominant. You said that they were letting him throw a little bit more on first down, which really would be a pretty big game changer. But also, if the defense, you know, if Pete Carroll can dial up a defense that's been a little bit more solid than the last few years, and they have Russ, and they let Russ cook, I mean, that's, you know, a team that probably moves up our power rankings pretty quickly. And I think they were pretty high already.
I picked them to go to the NFC Championship.
That's right. And then I think you were going to look at the Colts. There's another game we did not mention that much about, is the Colts losing to the Jaguars. Man, Phillip Rivers, we had sort of dispensed with the Phillip Rivers is bad at the end of games trope, because a lot of times he was playing from behind and just sort of desperately trying to get the Chargers back into it. But today, again, in his debut, he was very good. You know, he was exactly, I think you made a joke at some point that he was going to like complete every pass. And like he basically did for a lot of the game. And then things fell apart at the end. So I'm anxious to see a little bit of your analysis there of whether Colts fans should be worried, or whether this was just some growing pains of him fitting into this offense, because that's another team that we were pretty high on coming into the season.
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to look into the Seahawks, because I think we're going to be discussing them at length on the next episode, because I think that's the game of the week next week. Patriots Seahawks is Sunday night. I'm really looking forward to that game.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the marquee one. Should be really good. All right. So like I said, we will be back Friday morning with some, you know, whatever it takes. We just dropped, and I don't even remember. It's so late at night and I'm so dazed from the day. Stephen may say on Friday, you know, when you listen on Friday, he may say, you know, that take we had Monday was wrong, and I looked at the film and here's what we found. But that's sort of the aim of our show, is to go beyond first impressions and try to figure out what's really going on. So that'll be there. And, you know, he will write those stories throughout the week. Find those at ftw.usatoday.com. And then he is on Twitter at the Stephen Ruiz. And I'm on Twitter at Chris Corman. Hope you will find us there. Shoot us any questions, any thoughts. You can tell Stephen you want to fight him because he talked bad about your quarterback. I think he talked bad about half the quarterbacks in the league today. So, which is actually low. That's a low percentage for him. I feel like you were feeling a little generous today because football is back, and we're just all feeling good about that. That we somehow made it to this point in the coronavirus world where we were able to play football. So it was certainly an intriguing start to the NFL season. But like we said, I'm not sure that much changed. You know, a lot of times there's overreactions to week one. I feel like this is like, week one. Like that's pretty much what we thought was going to happen.
It's like, yeah, maybe sure.
Maybe that just goes to show that like we're growing as a football watching community. Like we're nailing it. We don't need to adjust the prior. We were on the ball this offseason.
I mean, we have so much more information now. I mean, I was thinking about that today, like just looking. I mean, the amount of information at our fingertips to try to understand these games is infinitely more than what it was even 5 years ago. So I think that would make some sense that we understand it more. But the NFL is the NFL, and it's going to throw us like horrible curveballs that we will just completely whiff at as the season goes forth, because that's what the NFL does. So we'll be here to talk all about it and write about it, try to figure it out. Steven, how do you want to end this episode?
I just want to thank Bill Belichick for giving me everything I ever wanted out of a football game.
Creative use of Cam Newton. Man, I can't wait for your story taking a deeper dive. It'll be really exciting. So, all right, everyone, thank you for joining us. Like I said, we will talk to you later this week and maybe even on Twitter. Take care. See you then.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.